If you have your scriptures with you, which I hope each of us do, in one format or another, you may open up to Psalm 3. That will be where we're going to spend most of our time. I'm going to give you a little bit of a update on what's going on in my life, because it is why I picked this topic. So, as most of you know, I'm a school teacher. I teach music at Multisensory Learning Academy. It's a school, it's an elementary school that teaches K through 6. And this year we decided that we are going to be doing 7th and 8th grade. We're going to open up a middle school, and we're moving our 6th graders along with the 7th and 8th graders to a different campus, and we're going to be beginning the work of a new middle school under the umbrella of the MLA charter school that I work for. So it's all going to be kind of the same school, but two different places. And the new place is in Troutdale, and I'll give you a little update on the building. It's not going to be ready probably until October 9th is what they're telling us. So, as you know, this is the week that school starts for most people in the Portland area. And I'm supposed to be starting teaching my classes beginning on Tuesday. We have no building ready yet for us. So what we've decided to do, and what a church has been generous enough to offer to us, is they're letting us use the chapel, which is a four-square church in Troutdale at the other end of the parking lot. And they've been really gracious enough and helpful enough to let us use that space for the next few weeks until, you know, at least 5 weeks, we're thinking. 4 or 5 weeks. We have 7 teachers and then a couple of educational assistants, which are also sort of like teachers in a way. And we're floundering around trying to figure out what we're going to do. I, up till Friday, had no curriculum. And I've got all these new classes that I'm supposed to be doing. Syllabi, I guess, is the plural of syllabus. I'm doing a bunch of different syllabi for my classes. And so I have no curriculum. And I'm waiting for my principal to approve it. And it's been like a week or something. And I have already presented him with some options. And he hadn't approved of them until Friday. And that was a huge, like, oh, now I can breathe. Okay, so I can go from here and move on. But one of the things that I've been dealing with, and I've been noticing a lot of my coworkers dealing with, is something called anxiety. I don't know where I'm going to be teaching. I've never been in the classroom that I'm going to be teaching in, because it's still being built. I've never actually even been into the building as it's being constructed. I've seen pictures, but I haven't actually been in there. And I haven't actually seen or put my hands upon the curriculum that I'm teaching. Some of the students I have never met before because they didn't come to the open house. I have a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety, a lot of question marks hanging over my head. So my question to you before we get started in the text is, have you ever felt anxiety about the situation that you're in? I have 2 official days before school starts. There's Monday, and then on Tuesday they start. There are a lot of things that need to happen between now and then. Some of them I've told you about. Some of them I probably don't even know at this point. But the things that have confronted me is that it's a new school, brand new school. It's school out of a box because we don't even have our own place yet for the first month, month and a half. That's if it's on. You guys know construction. A lot of you are in construction. The timelines usually run on time, or they usually... Yeah. Okay, point got... Okay, we got the point. So it's school out of a box for who knows how long. I have no curriculum, except for I just got it ordered, and it should be here hopefully this week. And I have no... Oh, here's the other thing. We didn't get our classroom schedules until Friday afternoon. So we didn't know when we were teaching, what exactly we're teaching. We knew the subjects, but we didn't know when, what time of the day we're teaching them, and we didn't know who was in our class. So we don't have class schedules when I started writing this, but we found them out Friday afternoon. Some of us did. So we've got new curriculum to go through and a new classroom to set up. There's a lot of anxiety within the staff members, not just me, but all of the staff members in my school. The beginning of a new school year can be stressful. And I think a lot of us, whether we're students now or whether we're teachers, So a lot of us have anxiety and we're overwhelmed and we have a lot of worry. So this morning I'd like to take you through Psalm chapter 3 and how David dealt with anxiety. So go ahead and open up to Psalm 3. And we're going to read the first two verses. It says, "Lord, how numerous are my enemies. Many attack me. Many say about me, God will not deliver him." So this is about when David, just to give you a background on what's going on. So David is fleeing from his kingdom at this point. The point that he wrote this psalm, wrote these poems, if you want to call them that, or songs even, he was fleeing from his kingdom because his son, Absalom, was kind of taking over the kingdom in a coup, so to speak. It wasn't a very peaceful transition. So this is David crying out and saying, how many are my enemies? How numerous are the people that are coming after me, the burdens that are coming after me? And it's a pretty bad situation for David. We think we've got it bad. Well, David had it pretty bad too. He was dealing with worry, anxiety, and hopelessness. And if we had more time, I would take you through 2 Samuel 15, where it talks about what's going on. So just to give you a quick rundown. So Absalom rebelled against his father, and he basically usurped the throne. So David is king of Israel, and at this point, Absalom has come in and kind of usurped the throne. He's changed a lot of the hearts of the people. The admiration of the people was more towards Absalom now and not towards David, because David had made some major mistakes and was starting to get a little bit, absolute power corrupts absolutely type of thing. And so David was kind of losing the respect and the admiration of his people, and Absalom was there to fill the void in for the people. So he was gaining the respect and admiration. And so David fled, and he fled to the Judean wilderness for refuge. And when he was in the refuge of the wilderness, this is when he wrote this psalm. Okay? So that's a little bit of a background. So think about David's situation. And he was worried about his kingdom. He was wondering if he would ever see his capital city again. It's really hard to think when you have a king and he's basically exiled, how alone one might feel, and how sorrowful and worried about what's going to happen. He doesn't know if he's ever going to see that kingdom again. He doesn't know if he's ever going to see his home, his house that is rightfully his. He doesn't know if he's ever going to see it again. His family was pretty messed up at this point. But he doesn't know if he's ever going to see his home again. He was worried about what was going to happen to himself. He was worried about what was going to happen to his people, his nation, his country. He was worried if he was going to be killed by his son. He didn't know if his son was going to come and kill him or not, or one of Absalom's men. David probably worried about who he could trust. Can I trust my own guys? Or are they going to turn against me and go with my son, Absalom? He wondered if there was a way for reconciliation. I bet he wondered if there's a way that I can reconcile with my own son. These are all legitimate anxieties that probably a lot of us have wondered in our lives. We've probably all felt anxiety. How am I going to pay the bills this month? How am I going to give my children all the school supplies that they need? New clothing. How am I going to get ready for my job if I'm not fully equipped for it, like my feeling this last week? We've all felt anxiety. We've all felt pressures. We've all kind of wondered what's going to happen. What next? Psalm 3 shows us that David is overwhelmed with worry and anxiety. So verse 1 and 2 again, "Lord, how numerous are my enemies!" Exclamation point. He's not just whispering these. "How numerous are my enemies! Many attack me. Many say about me, God will not deliver me." God won't deliver him, is what many have said. So his world was crashing down on him. Everyone around him probably were convinced that God was done with David. There's no more need for David. God was done with him, and that he was going to be thrown off to the side. Now, in the Hebrew, in verse 2, I should say, literally, when it says that many say God will not deliver him, this is what the literal translation in the Hebrew would say. "Many are saying to my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God." basically, God won't even help you. Have you ever felt like God won't even help you? That's what these people were saying to David. That's the message. You know, we think about what goes in our brain, what goes in our ears, what goes in our eyes, and the things that we absorb through media and through books and all this kind of stuff. If that's all you're hearing, it's pretty depressing. It's hopeless. That's the message that he was hearing, that God won't even, he won't even come to help you. Does your stress ever make you feel like the stress is pressing in around you? I'll tell you, that's what I've been feeling the last few days right before I got a couple of those things were conquered on Friday, but I have felt that way. In times of anxiety, you may doubt that God will help you, just like those guys were saying about David. God won't even help you, David. We all encounter times like this to varying degrees, maybe not as bad as David's. But today I would like to share with you David's guide to keeping calm and trusting God. Now, have you ever? I remember seeing on Facebook, and different people have these shirts that say "Keep calm and something." Well, this message is going to be titled "Keep calm and believe on." Keep calm and I've seen a Jedi one. I don't know about Star Wars or something or other. So I'm going to take that and I'm going to say "Keep calm and believe on." So this is David's guide to keeping calm and believing on, which means trusting in God. So the first step is found in verse 3. So we're going to go through this whole chapter. It's only, I think, 8 verses, but we're going to go through each verse here. This step 1 in David's guide is found in verse 3. But you, Lord, are a shield that protects me. You are my glory and the one who restores me. First thing David does is to block out everything. He acknowledges that people are saying, God's not on your side. God isn't going to help you. He's not going to even pull you out of the muck that you're in. Right? He ignores that. And what he does first is recognize what God has done for him. And we see 3 different things. He takes his mind off of the world around him, and he thinks about 3 different parts of the character of God. And we're going to look at each one of these 3 parts of the character of God. The first one that he mentioned is God is a shield around David. God is a shield around me. He says in verse 3, But you, Lord, are a shield that protects me. So this is the protector part of God's character. He's the protector of David's life. God has protected David and the nation of Israel many, 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 many times. If you look at the life of David and just how, just even looking at David, not even looking at the nation of Israel, we see that as a child he was protected from bears and lions and then Goliath and all these other things. God protected David. And you could probably think of times in your life that God has protected you. So the first part of God's character that we need to acknowledge is that he is protector. God is a protector. The second thing that David brings up as the character of God is God as his glory. So let's read verse 3 again. But you, Lord, are a shield that protects me. You are my glory. What does it mean that you are my glory? This is one thing that David values more than anything else. He's the one thing that David boasts in. You know, we could boast about, some of us have classic cars for the car show that's coming up, and some of us have a nice house, beautiful views of, the Columbia River and the mountain, and some of us may have condos, timeshares at the beach where you can just revel in the glory of that. But what David is saying is that the number one thing in my life, the most valuable thing in my life is you, God. Nothing else compares. Your creation is wonderful, but in the end, who created it? You did. So everything around us that we enjoy, like the creation of Mount Hood and the Columbia River and the ocean that's on the coast, those are all things that God created. That's showing his creativity, his imagination, his workmanship. So ultimately, we think about him as our number one valued thing in our life, person in our life. So you think of David, his position, his wealth, his wisdom, his strength. He doesn't glory in any of that. He glories in God. They all fall short to the place where God is in his life. Because all these things will fade. Obviously, his position is in limbo land right now. His wealth has actually been taken over by his son, Absalom. His wisdom, he's got some lack of judgment in the last, you know, part of his life. And his strength, he's going to get old and it's going to go away. All the things that he would take glory in are going to fade, or they are fading in this at this point in his life. But he takes glory in God. The third thing that he recognizes of God's character is that God is the one who restores David. This means that God lifts up David in position. Some of your guys' translations will say, he lifts up my head. You ever been in a position where your head is down and you're crying? Or you're just worried and you've given up and your hands, you just put your head in your hands and you're done, right? Usually that's a sign of giving up. That's a sign of frustration and retreat and defeat, really, right? You feel defeated in life. But David says, you're the one who restores me, or you're the one who lifts up my head from that moment of depression, the moment of anxiety where I don't know what's going to happen. So some translations say he lifts up my head, and the other translations say, which mine says, you are the one who restores me. He puts us back into a place emotionally and physically where we're healthy again. You think about David, he was in a very, very bad place after he left Israel. He fled Israel. I shouldn't say he left. He was fleeing for his life. He was humiliated, but God is the one who would restore his position. And I believe that this is physical and emotional. God's the one who restores our emotions. It's not us. It's not some magic potion drug that you could take or certain philosophies that you could adhere to, practices that you can do. It's God who restores our emotional state as well as our physical state. So the first step in what David would recommend, David's guide to keeping calm and believing on, is to recognize God's character, the character of God. If you're overwhelmed by worries and you have doubts and fears, what is our natural tendency when we are in these situations? It's not to think about God. My natural tendency is not to think about God. We try to handle them our own way. I think, what do I need to do? If I just worked a little harder, if I just read the right book or the right article, if I just did this one thing a little better next time. Instead of doing that, which is our natural tendency, we need to start looking at God first. So the three things that David does is he focuses on God's character, he focuses on, number one is that he's a shield that protects him. He's the number one value above all other things. And one of the things that we need to remember is that David didn't have Christ. David had God before the cross. And so when he says, you are what I glory in, we need to remember that we have the same glory, but we look at the cross. We look at what Christ did for us and who he was. And that's what we glory in. We don't necessarily, we're not limited, I don't want to say limited, but we're not quite in the same knowledge base that David was in at the time that he wrote this psalm. If he would have had the cross and known about that and who Christ was and the things that Christ did and the perfect life that he lived, he probably would say more. He'd probably say, I glory in the cross and in the one who died upon it. Most importantly, the one who died upon it and what was accomplished on that day. We need to remember that as we're looking at how Christ is and God is the glory of our life. And then the last thing is remember that he's the only one who can lift up our head and restore us in our daily walks with him and in our standing eternally. Okay, the second step, so the first step is acknowledging Christ's character. The second step is found in verse 4. To the Lord I cried out and he answered me from his holy hill. The second step for David in keeping calm and trusting on or believing on is that he turned to God with his request and petitions. If you have something that's going on, bring it before the Lord. What did David say? It said that God heard it and he answered it from his holy hill. From the throne where God is, God hears you and he answers you. He doesn't just do this for David. He does that for us. He hears us and he answers us. But the problem is that we need to come to him first. He doesn't hear you unless you say something. God knows your heart, but he also wants us to be very vocal with him. I call it being real, being up to date, being current. God wants us to be current with him. If we're having a problem, if we have anxiety, if we have worry, come to him and say, God, this is where I'm at. Help me. And he hears you and he answers you. That's verse 4. The second step in keeping calm and believing on is go to him. Go to God and tell him about your problems. Tell him about where you're at and ask him for help because he hears you. The next verse really deals with where a lot of us struggle with worry and anxiety. So let's go ahead and read verse 5. It says, I rest and sleep. I awoke, for the Lord protects me. You know, I read this at first, I'm thinking, why is he talking about his sleeping pattern? What does this have to do with any of this? But then I realized worry and anxiety usually affects humans when they're sleeping because they don't sleep. I'm getting a lot of, yeah, I don't sleep. When I'm worried, I don't have a problem with it. I just fall asleep. But Andrea's like, aren't you worried about it? You know, I'm done. When I'm tired, I'm done. But most people take out their anxiety and their worry in their sleeping patterns. It affects their sleeping patterns more than anything else. I'm seeing a lot of, yep, that's me. So what does David say? David says in verse 5, I rested and slept. I awoke. And then he goes back to the character of God. I awoke, for the Lord protects me. So you ever lose sleep because of something you're worried about? And I think a lot of us could say yes. I usually don't, but sometimes I do. Many people do lie awake worrying about things. And really, it's not worry, it's fear that motivates that. Fear about what's going to happen. Fear about what's going to happen to you, your children, your job, maybe your church, your other family members. You worry because you fear that something bad's going to happen. Fear is usually the underlying motive, a motivation for this worry and this anxiety. So we worry when we don't have control over a situation and we're afraid of what might happen. I would like everyone to turn to Matthew 6, verse 27. Matthew 6, verse 27. Because a lot of us have fears. We worry about what's going to happen. We're afraid of something bad happening to us or a loved one or a workplace or a church or something. Jesus said this, which of you by worrying can add even 1 hour to his life? Why do you worry about clothes? Think about how the flowers of the field grow. They do not worry or spin. And he goes on and he talks about all these things as a part of nature that don't worry about themselves. They just do. They just are. You realize that your worry doesn't add a single day, a single second to your life. In fact, it probably kills you. It probably takes years off of your life. But it makes you decline when you worry so much, right? That worry doesn't do anything for you. It doesn't add a day to your life. What I'm going to suggest is that when we, and it doesn't say this exactly, but it implies this. You could be worried about politics, world events, prophecy, school curriculum in my case, children and child raising. You could be worried about church issues, work issues, any sort of issues that you have coming at you. The more that you fear and the more that you worry, it means the less you trust God. Because in the end, God has control over it. It's going to happen the way it's going to happen. God has control. And in the end, if you've read the last chapter, the last few chapters, I should say, you know how it's going to end. Relatively close to how it's going to end. We don't know all the details. But we have the picture that God's going to win in the end, right? So why are you worried about it now? And if you believe that God will protect you, there's no reason for you to fear now. That's why there's so many times. I think I read somewhere that somebody counted up how many times it says fear not, and it was 365 times. Something to that effect. In the whole scripture, it was one per every day. Fear not, because he's protecting us. He's the shield that protects us. And nothing's going to happen to you that he doesn't already have planned for your life. So fear not. Okay, Now, I want you to turn over to 1 Peter chapter 5, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6. And God will exalt you in due time if you humble yourselves under his mighty hand, verse 7. And here's how you humble yourselves: by casting all your cares on him, because he cares for you. This goes back to what David did. He cried out to the Lord, and he asked the Lord for help, because God hears you and God answers. That's what it says in Psalm 3. You heard me and you answered. If you want to humble yourselves under his guidance, under his mighty hand, the only way of doing that is by casting all your cares, which I think that includes anxieties, your worries, your frustrations, your question marks in your life, all of those things that give you anxiety, you cast them upon him because he cares for you. So hand them over to him. Give them over, all of your worries, all your anxieties. And in a way, this will prove to you and to God that you really are dependent upon him. And the more you depend upon him, the less worry you're going to have. It's kind of a cycle. The more you hand over to him, the less worry you're going to have. Now, let's go back to chapter 3 of Psalm chapter 3, I should say. Verse 6, the next verse. I am not afraid of the multitude of people who attack me from all directions. I want you to notice first, but before we go on, there's a progression of events in this process for David. So we've gotten from verse 1 to verse 6, and there's progression of events starts like this. When David has a problem, he sees the problem, and then he first remembers the Lord as his protector. And then he cries out to God, his protector and his glory. And in verse 2, it says he's his deliverer. Or verse 3, restorer. So you have, he first points his attention to God. Then he cries out to God. This is all part of David's progression. He cries out to the Lord for help, and the Lord hears him and he answers him. And when David remembers who God is and what he has done, David stops worrying and he sleeps better. And it's because he trusts God. And then in verse 6, he proclaims that he won't let fear guide him, even when tons of people are against him. So there's a progression here. And I think that this progression could help us. Acknowledge what your fears are. In his case, it was people coming after him, his enemies coming after him. Look at who God is. Acknowledge who God is, what he's done for you. And then ask him for help. This will help you sleep better. It helped David sleep better. This will help you not be so worried about your enemies coming after you with bows and arrows and swords or whatever they had back then. You won't be afraid of the multitudes of people who attack me from all directions, as it says in verse 6. Go ahead and turn over to 2 Timothy chapter 1. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. And you notice David, before I read it, you notice David's attitude. He doesn't fear the people who are coming at him. He's not living under fear and wondering and worrying and anxiety ridden. That's not what he says about when the people are coming at him from every direction. And this is what it says in 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. For God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and self-control. How would you describe your opinion of your enemies who are coming at you from all directions, as it says, as David says? Do you have a spirit of fear? Or as David said, he says, I am not afraid of the multitude of people who attack me from all directions. Because sometimes life feels like you're getting attacked from every direction. Probably because you are. David didn't have fear because he realized, like it says in 2 Timothy, for God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and self-control. He looked at his troubles and his trials without fear. And so are we. We're supposed to stand without fear, fearless. This is not letting anxiety rule our decisions and our thoughts. So oftentimes, we make decisions because we're anxious. We make decisions because we fear. We're worried about something. Oh, I fear that this is going to happen. So in order to prevent this from happening, I'm going to make my decision based on this fear. When it's not God's direction that he wants you to go in. It's a direction that's made out of fear. Don't let anxiety rule your decisions and your thoughts. All right, go to verse 7. We're on the last two verses here, verse 7 and 8. We'll start with verse 7 in chapter 3 of Psalm. It says, "Rise up, Lord, deliver me, my God. Yes, you will strike all my enemies on the jaw, and you will break the teeth of the wicked." I read that and I was like, yeah. Okay. David calls on the Lord to fight his battles for him. That's what I could, the only thing I could come up with is that when you hand over all your cares to God, when you hand over all your anxieties, your worries, and your troubles to God, you're asking him to fight your battle. And let me tell you, hasn't got any losses yet. He hasn't lost a battle. In the end, he's going to win. So this is casting your cares upon God and asking him to fight your battles. And David describes God as a warrior who fights off the enemies. And David even asks him to basically punch his troubles in the face. Punch his enemies in the face. And you know, the funny part is that we have the same access. That's the cool thing, is that we have the same access to say, God, punch these worries in the face. Knock out their teeth. What does he say? He says, you will strike all my enemies in the jaw. So basically he wants them to break their jaw. And then you will break the teeth of the wicked. A lot of times we don't word it like that to God, which is maybe more respectful towards our enemies. But we have the same access. God can fight your battles too. He can deliver you from you carrying that burden if you let him carry it for you. And then in verse 8, the Lord delivers. You show favor to your people. So in the end, after dealing with all this anxiety, all this worry, all this fear, David acknowledges that God delivers him out of that mindset and gives favor to him. So God delivers his people. And in some translations, it says salvation. The Lord saves. It could be saves, it could be delivers. Different translations say different things. So I want to bring this right back around. If you go through this guide, David's guide to staying or keeping calm and believing on, I think it could help us in a lot of the anxieties and the worries that we have. In the next few weeks, we begin a new school year. Some of you guys are in school. Some of you are teachers in school or involved with the school, secretarial or counseling or different things involved with the schooling. As you get into this new challenge, this new adventure, this new journey that you have this year, we need to remember, when we feel stressed out, how did David deal with it? How did David go through his worry, his anxiety? There'll be a temptation for us to worry about a ton of different things. It's how we deal with it. And realizing that worrying and being anxious and having tons and tons of fear is the opposite of keeping calm and believing God. It's the opposite of it. Because you're trying to fight your fight without his help. And that's not fun. So when you're tempted to give in to fear and anxiety, and you're not sleeping well, and you're trying to fix things on your own way, remember David's words in Psalm 3. And one of the things that I could tell you, because it's only 8 verses, and I know that some of you have very sharp minds about memorizing things. I don't. But if you have even if you don't, I want you this week, as you're going through struggles, if you're going through your hard times, and as you're going through your Bible reading, which everybody should be reading their Bible some every day as much as they can, go through Psalm 3 and read it every day and put your name in there. And not just say, you know, this is David's words. Say, these are my words. When I feel stressed out, when I feel overwhelmed, when I feel fear overtaking me, say, God will deliver me. You, the Lord, are my shield that protects me. You're my glory. You're the one who restores me. Go through each of these verses and own them. Make them your own. These are words that we could own and be praying to the Lord. Use David's words. Think about the character of God. Here's basically a summary of the progression of events. David's guide to keeping calm and believing on. Think of the character of God first. Call out to him and cast your cares on him. Rest and trust that he will protect you. Call on him to handle your specific enemies, your burdens. Fight the fights for you. And acknowledge that he has power to carry you through it, and that he has carried you through it.